Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show, an hour of mind power. And we're going to be adding a little more to the mix. What's that? It's going to be animal power. Actually, I guess I'd call it life power, because all forms of life are very special. And those of you that listen to the show regularly know how much I enjoy animals and stories about the same. Well, my guest today, Mark Beckhoff, is a professor emeritus of ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Colorado, and he's in the Boulder area. He's written about animals extensively. His research has gone into a great deal of study of same, and we're going to be talking about his book, which really has a good title, Why Dogs Hump and Bees Get Depressed. That's right, even those buzzing little critters that we just take for granted, they have mood swings. Who knew they suffered from PMS? Well, maybe it's not PMS, because the drones are what we call the male. I want to welcome to the airwaves Mark Beckhoff. Mark, thanks for joining me today.
Great to be on your show. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to discussing my book with you.
Well, you know, Mark, the world of animals, insects, reptiles, all of these various creatures we share the planet with, it's such a phenomenal infrastructure. And I know that there have been those in the minority that really understand the connection with all of it. But what turned you on to saying, I want to explore this more than just intellectually? I really want to be aware of these connections. Why is that important to you?
Well, my folks tell me that I started asking questions about what animals were feeling and thinking when I was three. And the discussion I had with them about, 30 or 40 years later resulted in a book called Minding Animals, because we decided I always minded animals. But really, I'm just interested in other animals because they exist. We share our planet with them. And we just have so much to learn, although we know so much about them already. We have so much to learn about their, private lives, their emotional lives, their moral lives, how smart they are. So I think it's in my genes.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. We are animals ourselves. And
Right. This
is something that many people don't even want to acknowledge. And a friend of mine said, well, if you really want to recognize how much you are an animal, then just remember when you're on a picnic and you have to go to the bathroom. And I just chuckle when somebody shared that with me a long time ago. There are realities that, for whatever reasons, we often distance ourselves from. And having been around in a small way, not as extensive as you have, I don't think it takes much in the way of observation to realize that there is a tremendous amount of intelligence that we do not acknowledge. And when I think of the attitudes that were prevalent not all that long ago, I mean, you go back to the 1800s regarding animals and their care and their well-being, it really has only been in, what would you say, about the last 150 years that we've started to be more mindful of animals, and I'd say more attentively in the last 50 years. Would you agree with that, or would you say I'm all wrong?
No, I think you're quite close. I mean, for long times there were people who abused animals, didn't think much of them. Oh, you're just an animal was an insult. And then Charles Darwin, not much more than 150 years ago when he wrote On the Origin of Species, and then a book called The Descent of Man, wrote a lot about animal emotions, animal cognition, and the moral sentiments of animals. But in fact, it's even been maybe in the last 10 or 15 years, that there's a much wider scale acceptance of the fact that other animals are sentient and conscious beings. And what I love about it, and why I basically put the book Why Dogs Hump together, is I've been writing these essays for Psychology Today for about 3.5 years. I just wrote, I think, my 527th essay. And people know to send me stories from, you know, scientists send me the results of their research, and non-scientists send me beautiful stories about their animals. And really, what I like to say is that it's very hard to find skeptics now about, you know, animal sentience and animal consciousness. And I always like to say the question isn't any longer, you know, do animals feel joy? Do dogs grieve? Do dogs feel joy? Do chimpanzees or fish even feel emotions? The real question isn't if they do, but why they do, why these emotions have evolved. So it's an incredibly active and exciting field.
Well, it's interesting you make that statement, because I think we could say the same thing about human beings.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I was reviewing some material about, I'm hoping, a potential interview coming up, written by an archaeologist who is down in the Amazon, and he writes about this particular grouping of people, and I was appalled when I was reading the stuff that these people did and the murders and all the other things that they went on. And they're isolated, or they were isolated like you wouldn't believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, behaviors have to be taught. There is a process of learning. How are you going to be able to make comparisons with anything or evolve as an individual if you don't have various modalities that you're brought in touch with? The process of thinking is something that has to be cultivated. It just isn't necessarily there. And
right. Yeah.
This is what you have brought out in a lot of your commentaries. And, of course, you have a short commentary on how important pets are for us and how good they are for us, for our well-being. And I would concur 1,000%. And I would also say to that, nursing homes. I mean, there was a time it would never have been permitted to have a goat, a horse, a dog, a cat brought into a facility because they were considered filthy. Well,
right.
The wellness level of people that are allowed to integrate with animals, even when they're just visiting, is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And
yeah.
You address that. You even talk about how goldfish, a little tiny goldfish in a bowl, can have a profound effect on someone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've known for a long time that just being in the presence of other animals, most of the work's been on dogs, some on cats, has an incredible therapeutic effect, if you will. And even fish, and when I say even fish, of course, now we're learning so much about fish in the last few years that they're fully conscious. They process morphine in terms of pain relief just the way we do.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, the other title of the second part of my book, Why Dogs Hump and Bees Get Depressed. We now know bees get depressed, and they show the exact same neural correlates of depression as do humans. And so, really, the main message is that, you know, we don't have to embellish other animals. You know, there's people who write books and they go way beyond what we really know, you know, in order to convince people that animals are magnificent, fascinating beings. But we now know, you know, for example, that mice and rats and chickens display empathy. You know, people for a while were shocked to see that, you know, or to learn that chimpanzees and elephants and maybe wolves and dogs display empathy, and now we know other animals do, and we also know how good they make us feel. And excuse me, I have a great story. My mom had really severe physical and mental decline, and she got to the point where she was pretty far gone. She had been afraid of dogs. She didn't hate dogs, but she'd been afraid of dogs for all her life because she was bitten when she was young. And a neighbor came up to her apartment in Florida, and she had under her jacket, she had a little teacup poodle because people weren't allowed to have dogs in this retirement community. And the woman's husband had passed away, and her dog was her best friend. And she showed the dog to my mom, and we all got really upset because, you know, frankly, we didn't know how aware my mom was, but we knew that she wasn't very aware. And her friend, without asking, dropped the little teacup poodle in my mother's lap, and she smiled. And she actually was able to move her arms and touch the dog. We figured that had been the first time she'd had contact with a dog probably in 78 years.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. What a story.
Yeah, we all went, oh, my goodness, no. And all of a sudden, my mother smiled, and the dog nestled, nestled under my mother's blanket, and my mother smiled. And so what you're saying is very right, that, you know, we're animals. We shouldn't be embarrassed when people say, oh, you're behaving, you know, when people do something bad and they go, oh, you're behaving like an animal. I always say, you know, that's a compliment. And So I'm excited. I mean, I'm so excited about what I'm learning and my colleagues are learning. And like I said before, what your listeners and people like your listeners who are not scientists are sharing about the cognitive and emotional lives of other animals.
A point that you bring out in your book that I think is very significant, and I love the title of this particular paper you did, Nature Deficit Disorder Redux. Kids need to get off their butts. And I thought, we have in society, not with everyone, we have so disengaged from the natural world that for kids to actually be on a farm, which it wasn't that long ago in history that 97% of the people in the United States were involved in some level of farming, period. Mm-hmm. That was part of their survival for food, et cetera. Now and that was 3% in the cities, and it's a total reverse now. So A lot of adults are very detached from this natural reality, and kids are too. And I really think that when kids can get involved with maybe assisting a veterinarian facility or a wildlife facility, a zoo, and they can realize that life is not a sterile experience and that these creatures, you know, if they don't have a pet, and a lot of them, parents don't want to have pets because it's extra work, and they may live in an environment where they really can't take care of the pet. You know, economically, there's a responsibility when you have pets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So all of this comes into the picture. And kids, though, really respond to this in a wonderful way. It's a great way to teach them responsibility. I think of two women that I was made aware of. They bring giant bugs. Now, we all would go, thank you very much. I think I'll skip the bug sequence. But the kids are actually able to handle the bugs. And They just, their eyes get so big and they go, ooh, that tickles or whatever. But they're supervised because they don't want the bugs hurt. The kids aren't going to be hurt by them, but they don't want the bugs accidentally destroyed. And it's just wonderful what these two women are doing in school, teaching them about what the bugs do, how they contribute to life, they're part of the food chain, and blah, blah, blah. And You have what's called, you're participating in Jane Goodall's Roots and Shoots program. Tell us about that. What does that entail?
Right. It's so funny because I was just making a note to talk about that. Jane founded this group in around 1992, early 90s in Tanzania with 16 people. And it's basically a group started with youngsters to increase appreciation for animals, people, and the environment, which, of course, spells APE, A-P-E, which chimpanzees are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically expanded. There's thousands of groups in, I think, well over 100 countries now. I do kids' events. I've worked with senior citizens, and I'm still teaching at the Boulder County Jail to inmates. And it's just a wide-ranging group to get people to think about nature and other animals and to do something about it. And So, you know, we have kids who will go volunteer at the local Humane Society. I met a little boy who would walk the dog of his elderly neighbor, would get her mail, and would shovel her walk when it snowed. And
awesome.
So, yeah, it is. And so, really, you know, kids are the ambassadors for the future. And I just finished a book that'll be out next year called Rewilding Our Hearts. And I try to argue that really formal education, sitting behind a desk on our butts at computers, really unwilds us. That when you talk to people around the world in different cultures, there's this real natural affinity, we call it biophilia, for other animals and nature. And somehow formal education unwilds us. And so kids are the answer. You know, and that's what, I mean, I love the Roots and Shoots program is amazing. You know, kids don't get little stars on their heads. They just do the work and feel good about it inside. So thanks for asking about it because it's a very significant part of my life and a very important program.
Animals, in one of your essays, you talk about how they can be ambassadors for forgiveness, generosity, peace, trust, and hope. You have the most charming story about Jasper, and he's called a moon bear, and he's in China. Tell us about Jasper, because this is very heartwarming.
Well, in China, there's an industry called the bear bile industry, and rather than go through the gory details, what it is bile is used in traditional Chinese medicine, although I hasten to say it doesn't have a historical part in traditional Chinese medicine, although people will try to argue it does. It's very lucrative and makes a lot of money for bear farmers and pharmaceutical companies and the government. Jasper was a moon bear. He still is alive. A moon bear is like an American black bear. They've got a crescent across their chest. He spent 15 years in a cage where all he could move was his head and his neck. And he had a catheter inserted in his gallbladder so that bile would freely drip out of it. The reason we call him the spokes bear for hope is he's recovered. You wouldn't know from looking at him that he ever suffered a minute of his life, no less 15 years. He welcomes other bears into the Moon Bear Rescue Center outside of Chengdu, China. He breaks up fights, and he's a very peaceful animal. And so we use him as a model, although there's so many other examples. I know some of your listeners have probably rescued dogs who had been severely abused, and the dogs just overcome. They don't hold grudges. They don't, you know, they don't look at all the humans and go, "Oh, you nasty people, I was abused." And so we need to look for other animals for this hope and forgiveness. In that same article, I write about my dog Jethro, who I rescued from the Boulder Humane Society. I didn't know anything about him. He was under a year old, and he loved chickens, goats, hens, other dogs, cats, and he lived with me for 12 years in my mountain home. He never chased an animal, and in fact, he rescued a bunny whose mother had been killed by a predator. He brought her to the door, dropped her in front of me. I mean, he could have just eaten. I mean, the bunny was the size of a ball.
Right.
And he did the same with birds. So the main message there is other animals can teach us a lot about hope, forgiveness, and for compassion and empathy.
Well, I think that so often we want to make animals like Disney cartoon characters. And they make wonderful cartoons. I mean, I don't have anything against that. But I do think that we need to honor and respect those qualities and traits that they have. I mean, lions are lions, hyenas are hyenas, elephants are elephants. And I think too many times people want to put them into a mythical concept that denies them the dignity of their own beingness. I'll use that word. And this is something that when something goes awry, people say, "Oh, we got to kill this animal. This is terrible." Well, we don't know what's going on in their thinking. I think of Sigmund and Roy when the tiger took him off the stage, and when he had his stroke, the animal was trying to protect him, and fortunately, they didn't kill the tiger. The tiger mm-hmm. did what was very natural for it to do if it had been like its cub. How yes. do I take you to safety? Where do I take you? Where you're going to be okay because you're threatened. And fortunately, again, they didn't blame the animal. It wasn't the animal's fault. He actually was having a major physical trauma. And so the cat was, again, doing what came naturally. Now, of course, we're intimidated. We are the predators, just like we're at the top of the chain, you might say, of all the predators. And it's amazing to me how there is still that attitude, it's them or me. Yep. And the cohabitation of so many species is very difficult, especially if they're of the predator kingdom. And with us as human beings, I mean, there's major problems in India and Africa because of heavy population increases, various areas of environment that are being affected. Cohabitation on this planet is something that's really being looked at in a different way, fortunately, than it has been in the past. I mean, look at our grizzly. There's few places available for that phenomenal animal to wander, and that grizzly is a very important part of the life force and the living essence of the predator kingdom. We have the same thing with sharks. We have this attitude, well, if, you know, no shark is a shark is a shark, it's not any good, it's not worth anything. But it's a very vital part of a healthy food chain in the ocean. And all of these things are very difficult because of fears and mythology that have been perpetuated through the years. And with the massive population growth that we have, that's evolving right now, we are finally becoming aware of the fact if we're not attentive, we're going to destroy ourselves in the process, and somehow or another the animal kingdom will survive without us quite nicely, thank you very much. But if we want to be here, we are going to really have to start paying attention, but in a more cognizant way.
Right. We can't live without other animals. We can't fool ourselves to think that we will have a high quality of life. I mean, I shouldn't say we can't live without them. We can live without them. By the way, they can do very well without us. Our domesticated mm-hmm. companion animals, of course, need us. But, you know, wild animals did very well without us for millennia, and they can continue to do so. And I think what the recent research in an area called conservation psychology, also called conservation social work, is showing us that we suffer the indignities to which we subject other animals, and we do suffer when we harm them. And people can go, well, I don't feel anything. You know, it's not tangible. This idea that I'm working on called rewilding is stressing that these aren't necessarily tangible feelings, but think of it. Why do we go for a walk when we feel down and out? Why do we love it when, you know, if we're living with a dog or a cat or another companion animal, they come over and they nuzzle into us? We like it, and it calms us because every being is interrelated and integrated. And as soon as people really realize this, it's going to be a much better world.
Mm-hmm. I concur. Now, you also, in one of your essays, talk about trust, and you relate specifically to dogs, but I know that this is with many other creatures as well. But you make a point that is absolutely true. Dogs and other animals, they don't love everybody unconditionally. They're very discerning. They're very selective. I've experienced this many, many times. In fact, when we've gone to get a dog, we have Scottish Terriers, and whenever we've met up with a dog, one of the first things I did, I said, I don't want a dog that doesn't want me. And the animals always, always let us know they wanted to be with us. And they make an instantaneous decision. They're very telepathic. They read information about people instantly. I've known mm-hmm. people that have developed relationships with feral cats, feral animals. I mean, throughout recorded history, there have been these wonderful associations that people have had with animals of all types, even wild.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, but with dogs and cats, I've seen this demonstrated so many times that those people that I've talked to about the various experiences that I've had, maybe with their animals specifically, they'll say, you know, they don't do this with everyone. So animals read people. They really do.
Yes. Yeah, and one of the messages, the reason I wrote that essay is because I really don't like to hear, you know, once again, in some popular books where they try to make, you know, this big splash that dogs love us unconditionally, they're our best friends. Well, I think dogs are at least as or more loving as most humans, but you're absolutely right that it demeans them to say that they're just love muffins who love everybody no matter what they do. They don't. And I think your point about how, you know, your dogs may be attracted to and really, you know, hang out with some of your friends and may be leery of others is really what it's sort of a fact of life. It's a fact of dogs. And we should really recognize the fact that they are much more discriminating. It doesn't do anything to an animal to say they love everyone because they don't.
That's absolutely true. In fact, I had a Scottish Terrier. In his lifetime of 12 years, there were only three people of all the hundreds that he came in contact with, only three people that he would not even get close to. He was never rude, he never bit them, but he would not let them even touch him. Every single individual that he responded to, all of those three individuals, I found out later they were not to be trusted. They were not people that you would want to do anything with because they were hypocrites. And I said, that shows me. Now, I always believed animals would be discerning anyway. But it is something that when you see it demonstrated, it's very powerful. You don't ignore it. You just don't ignore it. And I know we're sort of getting close to coming out of time, but I loved your story about Chancer and Eyal. I just think this is a powerful story. Would you share that?
Yeah, it's a story about a young child who had some emotional disorder and his buddy dog, and it gets back to what we were talking about before about this reciprocal relationship of how sometimes with kids, but also adults. I work with prisoners, and, you know, some of them have, you know, unfortunately, they've done horrible things, but a lot of them are suffering psychological disorders, and how a non-human animal can pull them out. And the two words that always come up, and I'll bet you that if a kid could articulate it, is the animals trust them and they don't judge them. And I can't tell you how many times the word trust and judge have come up, you know, in these conversations. And that's where I think, you know, people say, well, the dogs, you know, say, for example, dogs unconditionally love us. No, it's so they go into a relationship, you know, sort of open. They don't really care whether you're ill physically or emotionally. They don't care whether somebody's in jail. They just don't care. And then they're open to everything. And I just, yeah, that story of Chancer and Eyal, and also, I mean, as you know, because I know you do this work, how many other stories there are about things like this is it's incredible. And like I said about my mom, you know, who she didn't hate dogs, but she was definitely afraid of them, how a dog seemed to pull her out of a very, very bad state, if only for an instant. But, you know, once again, there's that deep neural connection, and we don't have the foggiest idea what's going on, but we know it's there and it needs to be studied more.
Well, your book is a fascinating read. You give so many different perspectives why dogs hump and bees get depressed. Now, Mark, you have a website that people can go to find out more about your research, your work, and it's markbekoff.com, and that's MARC. C, B like boy, EKOFF.com, markbekoff.com. Thank you so much for being with me today. I wish you a wonderful holiday season, but more than that, keep up your research and work, because I think the more that we can put information out that's down to earth, not woo-woo, fluffy feather stuff, but really making us aware that this world we live in is utterly amazing. and the forms of life that we share on this planet with is just incredible. It's just wonderful, all of this research. Thank you again for being my guest today.
Great. Thank you, and I hope you and your listeners have a lovely holiday. Thank you so much.
You are welcome, Mark. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome back. Donna Sebo here, and I wanted to let you know tomorrow we're going to be talking with Nick Clements, Alpha Wolf. This is really a wonderful publication about how male role models make such a difference in young men's lives. And then Ingredients of Outliers, well, what do you think the word is? O-U-T-L-I-E-R-S. Well, John Schufelt is going to give us the inside track on that one. It was a new word for me, and I think you'll find the interview fascinating. And then we'll be talking with Tim Hawk, 50 Rules for Sons. And I think that this is so important. We focus so frequently on the female side of things, and I really appreciate the men that are taking time to put into written form details and information about how we can help our young men, our young boys, be productive, positive influences in everyday life. I think it is wonderful. I'm looking forward to having them as guests. Now, by the way, telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, you can call me at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I've got a lot of fun things to share with you today, but let's get the horoscope done. Yes, we've gone through 9 months. Virgo, Leo, Cancer, Sagittarius, Scorpio, Libra, Aries, Taurus, Gemini. We got all of those 9 months in. Let's get the last three. Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. I love doing this stuff. It's so much fun. Okay, now, those of you, those happy little goats that Capricorn is represented by golly, is winter going to be a dynamic month for you? Whew, you're going to get so much done. For some reason, you seem to thrive during winter months. It just seems to really flow with you. Well, that's going to be that way this year. You are really going to not only enjoy the joy of the holiday season, but you're going to be looking enthusiastically at the new year because you're going to say, now's the time for me to get things done. You've set up your platform for action this year of 2013, and now you're ready to move forward into 2014. Now, one of the things that you're not going to put up with is shortcuts. You have learned from experience that if you're going to do something, you have to do it right. Your standards are going to be pretty consistent, pretty high, and you're going to hold true, and you'll be glad you do. You're going to have a very good attitude relative to money. You're not afraid of saving or planning, but you're going to be very practical and down to earth about the whole scenario. Now, by golly, you're going to find that if you plan to take a little mini vacation in the latter part of January, it's going to serve you well. Get your bookkeeping in order. You'll be all ready to take care of your taxes for 2014. Take care of those loose ends that may be flipping and flopping around in your life, and you're going to find that 2014 is going to be an exceptionally powerful year for those of you under the sign of Capricorn. Now, Aquarians, you are not afraid of responsibility. Sometimes you take on too much. So I think that in 2014, you're going to be a little bit more discerning. You are also going to make your decisions about your associations with people and environments that you want to either get rid of or you want to step into. You are going to find yourself really wanting to work with a team. You are learning new leadership skills. You, under the sign of Aquarius, you're not afraid to speak up and speak out, but your discernment about what it is you really want is going to be quite high in 2014. Don't be surprised if you find yourself gravitating towards a step forward, maybe a giant step forward in a professional arena that means a lot to you. Animals are very important to you. You will make a decision about how you want to have an animal in your life and or be involved in some kind of activity that is related to the well-being of animals. And this is something that's going to be in your life in its own special way. But don't be afraid to keep up your writing skills, because it's important for you to sharpen your communication abilities and learn the use and the magic of the written word. Last sign we're going to cover is under the sign of Pisces. By golly, you're really going to want a party. Of course, I think people that have that strength of the sign, they really enjoy socializing with individuals. They love to be creative in their environments and have a lot of fun with it. They're also a bit of a controller, and you're going to have to learn when to delegate. That's right. Very important. Now, you need to be more prudent with your money. And this is because you really need to think through as to what you want in your own level of financial flexibility. Do you want to have a lot of extra money for traveling? Are you concerned about old age? I mean, what is it that's important to you? Why is money significant to you? Well, if you really understand money, it gives you the freedom to make choices that perhaps if you didn't have it, you wouldn't be able to make. So you are going to find that being out of debt is going to be very important to you, and that is going to be a focus. Now, you need to really make sure that you push your patience button frequently. That's right. It's going to be very easy for you to, let's say, explode or get irritated easily. So for those of you under the sign of Pisces, realize you're going through a training cycle, and you are going to need to pay attention to thinking first, speaking second. Don't let your emotions lead you by the nose, because it could get you into some hot water. Think first, speak second. But again, your social life, that's going to be very important to you, and I want to encourage you to be a part of groups or environments that really make you feel better as a person. It's just the best thing you possibly could do for yourself. Well, that completes the astrological forecast for the 12 signs of the zodiac. And again, telephone line is now open, 888-627-6008. So much is going on with the holiday season that sometimes we just wonder if we're going to have time to do everything that we need to do. And I came across a story about a man whose wife, every holiday season, always handled the Christmas cards. Ah, yes, we ladies can relate to that. I don't think my husband, in the years that we've been married, has ever sent out a Christmas card. I'm always the one that sits down, writes the letters, and does what needs to be done. And with Richard Schneider, that's what his wife did. Well, one year, and it was during the month of November, when his wife normally would start preparing. Yes, we gals have a tendency to look at our to-do list and say, I need to get this all done so I can send it out in a timely manner. Well, she ended up going into the hospital in November, And she just wasn't in any way, shape, or form going to be able to take care of doing the Christmas cards. Now, December, well, it was halfway gone, and he realized, her husband, that he was going to have to do the Christmas cards, going to have to get them out. Well, they had the boxes of cards. His wife had already gotten those. And he found her list. She told him where he could find the list. And he looked at that, and he just groaned. He said, oh, my goodness, how does she do this? Like 100 or more cards that were going to be sitting out. So with his male logic, he said, okay, I will do 10 at a time. I will do 10 cards at a time, and I'll eventually get it all done. So he organized his time accordingly. And he decided, okay, let me make this fun. My kids aren't home. I'll just turn on some music, turn off the TV, and I'll just do 10 at a time. And he said the first 10 cards, by the time he had gotten to card number 7, he said, I really appreciated what my wife had done for so many years. I didn't realize how much went in to sending out a card, because his wife always had a personal message in the Christmas cards. So after his first 10, he was just totally wiped out. And I just have to chuckle, because I'm probably like his wife, Betty. I mean, you're like the Energizer Buddy. You just keep going and going and going. Well, he got pooped after 10. Well, the names were still in front of him, and he said, okay, I can't do it the way I thought I'd do it. I'm going to have to really get it done. And so he started thinking about the people that he was sending the cards to. And there was one couple, and he reminisced in his mind as he was thinking about what he was going to say of certain activities they had done that were so much fun. And he said, I decided to write my own personal message in there. And he just kept doing it. And he said, after he started this process, he didn't find it was a chore. He actually was enjoying what he was doing. He said, I felt like I was having a mini reunion with these people. And I would just make a little note, remember this, remember that, have a wonderful holiday season. He didn't go on for pages. And he said, all of a sudden, he realized he was reaching the end of the list. Now, his wife, he got the good news. She was going to be out of the hospital. And he had done this and gotten it all done. And his wife, when he was driving her home, said, I'm so sorry, I didn't get the Christmas cards done this year. He said, I did. And I want you to know, I was so glad that I took on the responsibility of getting them out. I knew you couldn't do it, but I decided I would do it. And you know what? It really has gotten me into the holiday spirit. And it just made the joy of her coming home, being home for Christmas, but the awareness that the holiday is, when you do these cards, it is remembering good times with good people that you've had associations with. And I think so many times we get so busy that we forget that when we take that moment to make a note to remember someone and we put it off in the mail, a real card. I know so many people do the e-cards, and that's delightful. But there's something magical about receiving an item in the mail. And that magic during the holiday season goes on and stays with you. I know I often save the holiday cards. And lo and behold, when I was setting up the decorations and I found one card, I took it into my husband, and my goodness, it goes years back, but inside there were photos of something that he had helped design many years ago. And he looked at it, he said, oh my goodness, where did you find these photographs? I said, well, it was inside an old Christmas card. And it elicited all kinds of wonderful memories for him. Remembering others is so important because it can bring wonderful gifts to you as well. So if you're still dallying over those Christmas cards, know it's worth spending the time. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, let me tell you what I see for you in this coming year of 2014. And if you have a specific challenge, don't be afraid to ask me about it. Let's see what I can do to help you with it. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Do you have a product or service that you would like people to know about? Internet radio is a powerful medium that can assist you in reaching people who like to shop online and pass by electronic word of mouth information about you, your products, and or services. The Donna Sebo Show reaches around the world, and you can be part of that enterprising network. For more information, contact Vision Broadcasting via Donna at DelphiInternational.com.
Or call 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I have got a spicy recipe for you. I don't know if you're one of those people that are into spicy foods. I am. And especially during the winter months. I mean, I make soups. I put in the green chilies or a little bit of cayenne pepper. There's just something to me that's magical about spice. And I came across a chicken and chorizo jambalaya with peppers. Easy to fix. And I just thought I would share it with you today. So if you have a pad of paper and a pen, this is going to involve cooking up some rice. Very easy. It's going to be ready to go in under an hour. And what is nice about this is that if you wanted to, let's say, fix something in advance and you want to put it in the refrigerator, maybe having it for a meal the next day, or you've got company coming and you really don't have a lot of time to spend on a recipe and you don't want to be bothered with the cooking, try this. This is good. This is what you're going to need. A little bit of salt. You're going to need 3/4 cup of uncooked rice, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, and you're going to need 12 ounces of boneless, skinless chicken breast halves. And you cut it into chunks, about 1 inch thick, you know, nice size chunks. You're going to need an onion. That needs to be chopped up. And 1 each red, green, and yellow peppers cut into half-inch chunks. 8 ounces of smoked chorizo sausages, and you want to cut those into some 3/4-inch slices. Actually, what I like to do is cut them into slices and then have the slices. That's just my bias. 2 ribs of celery chopped, 2 tablespoons of cold water, 1 tablespoon of cornstarch, 2 cups of chicken broth, 1 can, a 14.5-ounce can of chopped tomatoes, a little bit of pepper, and 1/4 cup of chopped fresh parsley. Or you could use cilantro if you wanted a different bite of flavor there. Very simple. You bring a pot of lightly salted water to a boil. You add your rice. You cook until it's tender, about 15 minutes. Then you're going to drain the rice. And while that is doing its cooking, you want to take your tablespoon of olive oil, put it in a large nonstick skillet over medium heat, add your chicken, your chopped up chicken, and your onion, and you want to make sure that the chicken gets a nice golden brown color to it, and it'll be pretty much cooked through. It's going to take about 10 minutes, and you want to stir it frequently so that it doesn't burn. Then you're going to add your peppers, your chorizo, and your celery, and you're just going to cook it until the vegetables are al dente, not where they're soggy, and limp, but where they're just slightly cooked. And that's going to take you about 5 minutes. Real simple. Now, in a separate bowl, while the veggies are cooking, you take your water, cornstarch, you whisk it together until it's blended, and the cornstarch is totally dissolved. You stir in the chicken broth and add the broth mixture and the tomatoes right out of the can to your skillet, mixing it right in with the chicken and the onions. And you're going to let it simmer uncovered for 5 minutes, and you want those flavors to blend, and you want the sauce to thicken just a little bit. Then your cooked rice, pop it right in there, and you can season with a little bit of pepper, and of course your chopped cilantro or your parsley makes a very nice garnish over the top. Now, if you're one of those people that's totally lazy, which sometimes I can raise my hand and use that label, put everything into the crock pot. That's right. You might want to brown your chicken before you put it in, but just put everything into the crock pot. Let it cook, and you can put it all together in the morning. If you want to be sure that your rice cooks, then maybe add the rice, you know, cook the rice separately and add it. But I'll tell you what, just this recipe, you can serve it over noodles. You could serve it with quinoa if you wanted to. You can use brown rice instead of white rice. There's a lot of options you have, but it's the flavor that you're really going to enjoy. So that's why I wanted to share this with you, because I think recipes like that are so easy and so flavorful. And you could substitute another type of sausage. I have used Jimmy Dean sausage. You know, they have the maple flavor and that type of thing. In this recipe, I'd use the spicy sausage. You can use whatever kind of sausage you want. And I would say if you use a sausage like a regular sausage, you might want to brown the sausage first, removing as much grease from it as possible. And again, use a crock pot. Like I said, I get lazy sometimes, and it's just because the schedule gets so hectic, keeping it simple is really a big deal to me. Visiting online before you go to a store, check out to see what people have. If you're one of these last-minute shoppers, you can check with a store online, find out about reviews on products and ratings, and you have to find out what kind of feedback people are giving relative to the products that are being purchased. And also, it may give you a negotiating positioning when you go into a store, like your Best Buy or some of the others, to see if they have a better price or not. It is really, really interesting how you can get that information anymore, really in advance. I had to chuckle when I came across this story, because it was a statement about how our world has changed. And this is about someone who was working for an auto dealership, and they were cold calling customers. And the person who is doing the cold calls, and I have a friend that does this type of work as a fundraiser for different organizations here in the Seattle area. The cold caller has a script that they work with, and this person said, "Hi, I'm calling on behalf of." Person that answered the phone asked, "Is this a recording?" And so this individual responded and said, "No, I'm not a recording, sir. May I please speak to..." And the person said, "I don't believe you." And they hung up. Well, I don't know about you, but I have gotten so many telephone solicitations that often I get these recordings all the time. If there's a real person on the other end, I don't know about it, and I'll just hang up on it. What about you? How do you handle it? Well, pity the person that is doing the cold calling, because it takes a great deal of resolution to follow through and to really reach people. In today's world, with the technologies we've got, often you can't tell the real thing from the recorded issue. Donna Sebo here. Join me tomorrow, won't you? We're going to be talking about the Alpha Wolf and more. I hope you will join me at my broadcasting table. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the master of your soul, also your mind. Never forget that. It belongs to you. Cultivate it, educate yourself, and be open to thinking so that you can discover the greatness that's within you. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Donna Siebel. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.